Good morning, and we're back. If you guys are just tuning in, it's 9 o'clock, and you are listening to 93.1 FM on your radio dial, your NPR station in the territory, WTJX, our only public broadcasting system here in the territory. But good morning, good morning. And we're joined in this second hour. I have in the studio with me Mr. Larry Katz. He's FEMA's Virgin Islands Caribbean Area Office Manager. And online, we have Director Daryl Jashin of the Virgin Islands Territorial Emergency Management Agency. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Director Jashin from VITEMA.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
You can't hear? Okay, we'll get it. Okay, so you can hear me well. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
All right, so... we're going to get Steve hooked up here, make sure he can hear properly so that he can get into the conversation. And June, we're in May. We just started May. But, you know, whenever May starts, the countdown to hurricane season and the anxiety. Director Jashin, you know how anxious and nervous I get every hurricane season. I am the least prepared and the most anxious and worried person in the universe hurricane season. So the Atlantic hurricane season starts June 1st and it goes until November 30th. Let me ask this question. Why does hurricane season have to be so long?
Well,
that seems like a lot of months.
Well, it goes back to history. You know, you see that there's a historical chart that talks about the Atlantic in general and the formation of the conditions that come to bear. So you've had, you know, early season hurricanes, we'll talk about early in June and late season. If you've been in the territory long enough, you remember Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
That was in November. And we've had early ones, too. So it's not just U.S. Virgin Islands. This is all the Atlantic. And they have seasonal projections. They talk about early in the season, they're more towards the Atlantic, and then they become more focused towards, you know, the typical trough coming off of Africa. Then it goes more into the Gulf. And end season, it comes the opposite direction towards us. So it's all Mother Nature and what she has to do. But history has taught us that, you know, there's a season, and I get 6 months off and 6 months on, but we do have a height of hurricane season where 85% of all the storms between 15 August and 15 October come through. So that's what we're talking today, to take action to alleviate some of that stress and start planning your own individual plan, your family plan, your business plan, and what you can do, and start taking action now that we've finished Carnival, Festival, all the things now, Cinco de Mayo's done. We can focus together on hurricane season. And VITEMA is going to help us get through it along with FEMA.
And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, instead of 6 months, right, Mr. Katz, you know, here in the Caribbean, we could just have a shortened season, August to October, and then, you know, my anxiety level can be reduced by 50%.
Well, I mean, I can definitely talk to the people up in D.C. and see if we could shorten the season.
Yeah, just shorten it.
I think that would happen, but I think Director Joshua would agree that it's just not something that we control.
I know.
You know, it's something I've always told my kids, just because your homework assignment is due on Monday doesn't mean you have to start it Sunday night. Sometimes you're allowed to start it a little bit earlier, and it's the same thing for preparation for the season. And June's a good time. You know, we've done our spring cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the things are blossoming, and mm-hmm. and it's time for a new beginning. And in this case, it's a time for a little bit of preparedness, and a little bit of preparedness goes a long way.
It does. I can attest to that. It truly does. This hurricane season, as we prepare for hurricane season, we're now in May. What should a family, let's just use a family of four, what should a family be doing right now to get prepared for hurricane season? What can you tell that family you should be doing in May leading up towards the start of the hurricane season?
Yeah, this is Director Josh, and I'll start this off and turn on to Larry. First of all, if you were good Virgin Islanders, you were ready last year for 23, so you have stuff already with food items that are there. You have water, you have canned items. Take a look at those and make sure nothing is expired, first of all. Unfortunately, you know, it is an economic, you know, incentive, you know, to keep that stuff around. But if it's expired, you don't want to keep old stuff around. And definitely, if you don't have anything still back from Irma Maria days, it should probably be expired. But that's the number one thing. Make sure you have good items for yourself, your family, which you want to have. Again, do not forget your pets also, because pets are definitely part of your family for all of us. And make sure you have activities, you know, for your family to do, because you will lose the phone, you'll lose the internet. So you need to have something like you can talk to each other also. But have some things for the kids to do. Other piece I will say is have some cash. You know, whatever that amount is, it's up to you, but you realize ATM machines will be down for a period of time, and you know, we need to be able to still purchase other fuel or ice or things that we won't be able to store. So have some cash available to your particular needs for your family. So that's my opening comment for that. And Larry, any thoughts on your side, sir?
Hey, so Director, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. I would also say, though, you know, as Virgin Islanders, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And just like the director said, look at what you have, but also look at what your neighbors have, and in particular, what your neighbors don't have. And maybe between what they have and what you don't have and what you have and they don't have, you can kind of make things work together, because we are a community. We do want to worry. We want to spend time worrying about people that are not just ourselves. Mm-hmm. And get out there and look at people that maybe are in different situations and mm-hmm. might need a little bit of extra help.
Yes, that's a very good idea, because you know, there's so many people who may not have, and you don't know that they have a need because they're very silent about the lack of what they have. You talked about the cash situation. So that's important, because a lot of times we don't realize that putting away maybe $20 or, you know, $50, as much as you can afford now, you know, in addition to what you typically save for your family, just put aside a little bit of cash and call it your hurricane money. Or your emergency, weather emergency money. Put that away so that you're able to buy ice, you're able to buy gas, you know, if you need batteries during after the event has passed, that you're able to purchase those items. This month, we have Preparedness Month. Is it Preparedness Month, Preparedness Week? There's something that happens this month in May in advance of the hurricane season. Is that correct?
Yeah. This is not just for the Virgin Islands, but any state, commonwealth, mm-hmm. territory who has, you know, potential of being impacted by a hurricane. And I'll also throw in typhoon for the Pacific area. Mm-hmm. This is National Hurricane Preparedness Week.
Okay.
So a lot of individuals, families, and businesses are starting to think about this. Again, you know, we could get an early season storm, which would, you know, last week we thought maybe something was coming our way. If you're on St. Croix, we have all that flooding. That was a good wake-up call for a lot of folks that, oh, my goodness, the only thing missing was that wind-driven rain. But you'll get that with the storm. But you will get advance notice also, you know, with the National Hurricane Center or Hurricane Hunters. You should have that, you know, hopefully 5 to 7 days advance notice as we get more information provided and that word out to the community. So part of that is having a good means of getting that written information. So we have this, the tropical storm, you know, the watches, the warnings, and hurricane watches and warnings. So have a radio, definitely with batteries that you can get to your favorite radio station that will broadcast that information. And we work very closely with the weather stations and the radio station, get that information out to you so you have the advance notice. Unlike a tsunami or an earthquake, no notice, but usually for hurricanes, you will get that notification and we'll watch that intensification happen. So you should get at least, you know, a good 3 days to do that final preparation for us. And we should put that watch out and that warning out that lets you know that within our area, we're really going to get impacted. The other piece I would say, you know, look at your home, your apartment. You know when it rains, where it leaks. You know where those gaps are, and start taking time now to prepare. A lot of us, you look at your windows and your shutters and make sure you're able to seal up. again, you know, the rain coming down just straight down is one thing, but you have that wind that goes with it, and anything that's exposed or open is going to come right through and make things very, very wet, unfortunately. And the mm-hmm. other piece, as we know, we'll most likely lose our power. So by having flashlights and extra batteries, you can negotiate, you know, around your home is very, very important. And again, you know, when the power goes out, the lights will go out. You know, you should be able to stay home with your family and stay safe. That's the number one priority for us, is for safety of you, safety for your family, and then we will come back out and start the activities of assessing. And for individuals and families, I always talk about being self-sufficient, and that means, you know, being able to be on your own for a period of a minimum of 5 days. And this is a harsh environment that we're in. So having 5 days of food, water, activities, information, batteries is very, very important for you. You know, extra set of clothes, paper towels, those are all things just to get you through those 5 days so we can get, you know, ready to go for the next event and work with WAPA, work with the communications, work with radio stations, get that information up for you and make those assessments.
Okay. You said something very interesting while you, at the beginning of when you just started to speak, and you talked about the event last week. I wasn't on St. Croix. However, you know, I got pictures of the tremendous flooding that occurred here in the territory. And I'm signed up for VI Alerts. And I did not get an alert. I don't know if I didn't get the alert because I wasn't physically on St. Croix. I don't know how that works. But it seemed like we were unaware of that potential flooding event that occurred here on St. Croix. And it would seem that we would have been aware of the weather that was coming in. Did something break down in the communication to the public about that event?
No, ma'am. Nothing broke down. I mean, lots of reporting was going out because we had a flash flood watch that was issued out, you know, beginning, I believe it was, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday Thursday going through 6 p.m. on Sunday. So that was the first notice.
Okay.
Again, it was maybe some cases, it was still blue skies. It was all basically for the area. And then we received that flash flood, you know, alert. And then we extended it to 11 o'clock that night. So, you know, everything that, you know, went out should have gone out fine, and the systems were working fine. I was talking to National Weather Service, getting all that information out to the community. But there's so much coming down, and I really appreciate, you know, what was posted on Facebook that let Vitima know, and fire and EMS and police know, you know, where we were having some issues or concerns. I've never seen, and I've been here 20 years, you know, Cotton Valley, you know, the, you know, Home Depot flooding out. Those are unprecedented areas, but you have a tremendous area impacted on St. Croix from end to end, and it kept coming, then it would ease up and come some more. So, you know, the word had gone out, and information was shared to the community, and again, a lot of things are happening, but we want you to make sure that, you know, safety is first. We always talk about, you know, not going through areas that are flooded, but I think most every place was flooded. So the best thing you could do was just try to stay home and stay safe and getting through that. So I appreciate you asking those questions, but our systems and alerts are set up. And if you're on St. Thomas, you should have received the alerts also that were coming out, as long as you are, you know, signed up for the Alert BI system. But excellent point to bring up.
And I guess this is going to bring me to another question. And, you know, if you can't answer, you can't answer. Do you know whether or not our alert system is compatible with what's been happening with Liberty? Because I know that I am not the only person who has been signed up for VI Alert that we're not getting their the alert. And we did get, you know, just to be completely transparent, I did get a text message from Liberty last week that said that, you know, I need to bring my phone in so that they can do an upgrade. I have a Samsung device. I have a Samsung Galaxy S24 something, and they said that I need to bring it in so that they can do some sort of upgrade so that it works better with their system. But has Vitima been in communication with Liberty to ensure, or FEMA, to make sure that all emergency alert systems that should be up and working in our territory is working as they migrate their system from the AT&T platform to their Liberty platform?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, great question. And we do, you know, we do test our systems, you know, so each month, you know, on the third Thursday of the month, we do our alert of our tsunami sirens. And the day before that, we do send out text messages that just let the community know that we are going to be doing those tests. So that's an indication also. And we've also had several of the earthquakes come through that should have alerts that come out on that. And we did a big exercise on Carib Way, the alerts that came through. I know Liberty has been going through some upgrades. I know we had an outage a couple of weeks ago that impacted some of the subscribers that had not been migrated off of the AT&T system to Liberty system. We constantly work with the providers to make sure, but the backbone for our Alert VI system is a group called Everbridge. And that really is the main group that goes out. And you also have to make sure that your phone is set up to receive those alerts. In some cases, if it's a national alert coming from FEMA, it will automatically come through and be pushed through your phone systems. And Larry can talk about that in more detail. In some cases, the local alerts, you actually have to set up your phone to actually receive the local alert messages. And there's ways, if you go online, to tell you how to do that. But again, it's a great question. But if you're not getting those alerts on Wednesdays before I set out my tsunami sirens for the territory, that means something's not quite right with your phone. It could be the user, or it could be the network that goes forward. But so far, when we do our tests, I have a Liberty phone, I have a T-Mobile phone, and I have one that's Android and one that's, you know, Apple, to make sure they go through. In some cases, they don't go through. I always scratch my head and find, why did that not come through? Or it comes through like 10 minutes later. So there is a concern. Okay. I can't give you all the root cause behind it, but we do have a good conversation with all our providers and make sure we understand what's happening. And information that you're sharing helps me go back and talk to Liberty and see where we are in that migration. So I appreciate you sharing that information this morning with us.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have two devices as well. I have a Samsung and I have a, you know, the Apple phone. You know, so I have both phones like yourself. And like you said, sometimes it's a delay, and that delay can cost lives. So I think that's a conversation that needs to be had with the providers, and we will continue that. We have to take up our break. We'll get to Mr. Katz about the alerts from the national side when we come back right after this short break.
St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
Good morning, and we're back. If you guys are tuning in, I am not Neville. I know sometimes I can sound like I have a frog in my throat, but I trust you. This is Jamila. This is not Neville. We're here with Mr. Katz and Mr. Joshin, one from FEMA, one from VITEMA, and they're talking all about hurricane preparedness, and I am the worst prepared hurricane person in a territory. But we'll get to that in the very last segment about my unpreparedness for hurricanes, because Mr. Joshin made me promise last year that I would attempt to get better, and he would be proud to know that I actually bought two things on the list of stuff that he gave me. So I might be a little bit better prepared now than I was last year. But we're talking about the alerts on FEMA's side. How does those alerts go out? Because we got alerts from the National Hurricane Center, so Weather Center. So how does that work on the FEMA side?
So on the federal side, we have a program called the Emergency Alert System. Mm-hmm. And it basically scours everything that people listen to, whether it's cable broadcast, internet source broadcasting, telephone service. It goes through everything. And it's really meant for national level disaster type things, whether it's an act of terrorism or serious climactic events. Mm-hmm. Though that's what that's for. We test it every 3 years. 2024 is a test year. Mm-hmm. So we'll be looking at that probably sometime this summer. So there is I wouldn't call it a backup. It's sort of an umbrella system. Okay. But we rely on the states and the tribes and the territories and the commonwealths to do a lot of the alert work when it comes to local issues like this.
Okay. All right. And so, and Mr. Joshin, as we're talking about last week's event, I'm on radio. Did VITEMA and FEMA with the flooding, did alerts go out to our local, because we're a radio community. Did those alerts go out to the radio stations? And have you had VITEMA and or FEMA, have you had like a training session with all of the media outlets here in the territory, like with the radio stations? Or if not, is it something that you would consider doing where you have all of the media come in and you talk to them about the importance of when a press release comes out from VITEMA or a phone call comes in, about breaking, you know, the song or whatever the programming, to be able to put that information out immediately to the public? Is that a training that has been done, being considered, or something that can be considered, so that we live in a radio community, so that the radio stations and their owners and the people that work at these stations are fully aware of the importance of getting that information out to the public in real time?
No, that's a great question. I can tell you, we have exercised again. We did our Carib Wave. We did work with WSTA, which is identified on the federal side as our primary entry point. Like Larry was talking about the IPAWS, That message would come into them, and they then would distribute it out, you know, automatically to the other radio stations that are subscribing and have the equipment for this. Not all radio stations have this, and that was part of what we wanted to set up, is make sure that message could get to them, and they would go out automatically. Radio stations are also required to do monthly testing of their broadcast system on their own. So whatever they're doing there is also part on that perspective. The other thing is, you know, the flash flood warning that came through like at 5:30 at night, and so a lot of radio stations, they don't have individuals that are in the station at, you know, like this morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. It's a great time to get the word out to anybody and everybody. But we really have limited, I think, after-hours contact with the radio stations. We'd love to work on a consortium, and that, again, all radio stations coming together and operators to figure out how we can get that information out quicker in the right format and get it right, so we're not, you know, late to the message. So that can be improved, but a lot of the alert messages that come out the National Weather Service, like this, that particular one, are automatically generated and sent out. So there's not a whole lot that I have to do at my end. And as you receive it, you acknowledge back that you received that message, and it just lets them know that you've received it. So it's really more of a one-way push. But every time we do our drills and exercises, I try to bring in more with the radio stations and outreach to them and see how they can help out. But really what Larry was talking about with the IPAWS is really not subscriber-based. It's really pushed out to the radio stations that have that. And even for our own phones, you don't need to be a subscriber to that to get that message. But you have to be in that geographic location where the cell tower is. So if you are in Puerto Rico and we send out an IPAWS message, that is just for the Virgin Islands, you will not get that message because you're in Puerto Rico or you're in Miami. But if you have the Alert BI system and we send a message out, you will get it if you have subscribed to it and your phone is on in Puerto Rico, Florida, Texas, wherever you are in the Virgin Islands. So that's the difference between the two types of messaging that we send out. None of them you have to pay to subscribe to, but you have to subscribe or opt into that. And my team has about 21,000 individuals on the Alert VI system, and I really want to push to go to 25,000. And the more we can get on it, the more we can get validation of the messaging out to the community. But excellent point to bring up, and we really don't want to work with the agencies as well as the stations to do that. But some of my visit, they show me very proudly the equipment they have. But in the territory, our central radio station is WSTA, and that's been like that for years, and they have a system that's been set up and has been tested, but they're the ones that we would have to work with to make sure it goes out to the other radio stations.
And it seems, and you know, this is just, you know, I'm just going to make an observation. It seems like based on your explanation that there may be a breakdown in how that information is communicated to the other radio stations. And you know, these alerts are a matter of life and death. And so I think that, you know, clearly we haven't done it before, but there should be where, you know, through, I don't know if it's going to be your entity, the Office of the Governor, somebody needs to take the lead. If it's FEMA who organizes this, but there should be a training with all of the radio station owners, the radio station managers, you know, even talent, because talent may be on the air at a particular time when something comes in, so that they understand the importance of these alerts, mm-hmm. so that you can get the information out to the people. Because especially here locally, most people listen to some radio, and our elderly community especially listen to talk radio. And I think that that's important that we have that sort of training so that we can establish, you know, if it's just one point of entry here in the territory, that point of entry is in St. Thomas. You know, suppose the event happens in St. Thomas. Is there another point of entry on St. Croix? We are unique geographically, and that's something that we need to revisit and maybe take a look at so that the information can go out. Because I can tell you, I was in St. Thomas for Carnival, and I was getting calls with people asking me, about what's happening with St. Croix, what's happening with the flood, if I know if which roads are closed. I have a job to go to. If I don't go to work because the roads are flooding, what will happen? And I think that we have to have a better communication system in place because, you know, proper communication has the ability to save lives. I don't know what either one of you think about that, but feel free to let me know what you think.
Well, this is Dr. Gosh, and, you know, I great comments and everything's, you know, really well articulated, and, you know, working with the radio stations, you know, is, you know, very important to do that, either live or recorded. I can tell you, with the flash flooding environment, that comes down very, very quickly, and it's hard to really make those assessments. But if you're a local, you know typically where roads are going to flood. And again, it's do not go across, you know, with the water and getting flooded out. You just need to stay at home and stay indoors. That's the number one thing to go out and about for that. The elderly, definitely that communication. And then we have language challenges also. And I can tell you, you know, I work with Populup Senior and Populup Junior to make sure the Hispanic communities are aware, and some other radio stations. And if you do sign up for the Alert VI system, you can choose to get those messages sent to you in English or Spanish, and you can choose to get it by text message, or you can get it by a phone call, or you can get it by an email. As you sign up, you put that information in. So there's multiple ways by which you can get notified for that. But like you're saying, if the word doesn't go out, you can't get it. So a lot of what we do, and that's what our service in Puerto Rico is we set those triggers up, and as that occurs, they will send that information out. But again, it's at 2:00 in the morning. There's not a whole lot of folks at radio stations, and I think having those voluntary systems set up, and radio stations do set up, I would also put that on the radio stations to step up on that. Some are very, very good. Some of them are new to technology. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of radio station owners talk to me and trying to figure out how to get that set up, and we're helping them do that also. But the more we get involved, the better information we get out to the community, we will definitely, like you're saying, be able to save lives and get that early messaging out to everybody.
Okay, good to know. You wanted to say something, Mr. Katz?
Yeah, just to support Director Josh on this, you know, as Daryl said, Alert VI is out there. In the time that he talked about Alert VI, I signed up for Alert VI.
Okay.
I got on my phone. I did a Google search for Alert VI, all one word. Mm-hmm. The first thing that came up was a website that said, and it's Vitima's website, sign up for Alert VI. Mm-hmm. And I went to that website, and in the middle of the page, there's a link. Mm-hmm. And before, shorter than me explaining it, I was already signed up for that. So it's a great system. I do encourage people to sign up for that. I'm not sure if there's going to be any internal prizes for getting 25,000, Director Joshin, but I just want to get credit for the 30 or 40 that I may have gotten for you.
All right, 21,001.
Yes, yes. And while we're talking about Alert VI, and, you know, sometimes I think outside the box here, is there any opportunity to talk to the cell phone providers here in the territory, such as T-Mobile? We only have a few, T-Mobile, Liberty, and Via. The major ones, have them have that if you get a phone that it automatically comes with VI Alert, similarly to how the federal government is allowed to push that those alerts through. Is there a way where the state or territory, in this case, because we're a territory, can speak with those service providers so that if you automatically get a number through one of those service providers, that you automatically you're automatically enrolled in VI Alerts, and then you always have the option to opt out, but you're automatically enrolled?
I think that's something that we can look into. I know in some cases you are required to have not just a phone number, but you have to have an email address, and I think that's been one of the challenges, and I think my staff has worked around that. So a lot of times if they install or, you know, get all the apps that you can bring down, the Everbridge app is one of the key ones to bring down to let you have that alert, and then also going in and setting up so those local alerts. I you know, last time I got my phone, they just gave it to me. So, I didn't really have a chance to to do it, and a lot of individuals, there's so many buttons to push to get to that, but that may not be a bad idea to at least locally talk to those providers, at least, or give them some sort of a handout that you can give the individuals who get the phones if they want to get those on. Because in some cases, those local alerts are not on by default. And that's what I found out going through my two phones. Mm-hmm. You know, one was on, one wasn't on. So there's a little bit of education and outreach that has to get done. But that's a great point to bring up. We don't do that today, but I think it's also a good way we can do get more outreach with the community, but be able to bring that information down so you can get the early warning systems that's come up. But, you know, excellent point.
Yeah, because, everybody has a cell phone, even if they don't use the text feature, or, you know, a lot of people are shifting to where they're using the cellular phones. So if we're able to have that discussion with those three service providers to have those alerts be automatically installed, especially on seniors' phones, it can make a potential difference. So we've talked about all of this stuff. We're coming up onto the second break in, you know, a few minutes, but before we get to that, National Hurricane Preparedness Week, is there any special events that either FEMA or VITEMA has this week that's happening that we should be aware of?
Well, for VITEMA, really is getting out on the radio stations and starting to talk with the community. We don't necessarily have anything separate that's going on. We obviously work with, you know, Department of Human Services, Department of Health, and some activities that go on for them. There will be an event coming up 1 June that's going to be going on all three islands. So while it's not this week, we're getting ready to do some things that are going to happen on the 1st of June, and the community will be aware of that to help them out. But really now it's just getting that first dialogue conversation going and start thinking about the hurricane. But we'll have a lot more activities coming up, again, partnering with some of our key agencies where individuals go normally to is very, very important. But that's pretty much, we're doing the rounds this week, and we want to make sure that we, you know, today is a great day to talk about, you know, with you and your individuals for listening to radio so they can start thinking about this. And it really is a call to action, mm-hmm. what we're trying to do. But thank you for asking that question about it.
Is there anything that's FEMA? Do you have anything planned?
So what I would tell you is, you know, you see a duck swimming across the pond. It looks real calm, but mm-hmm. underneath it's just flapping like crazy. So so underneath you have VITEMA, you have FEMA that are furiously working to get ready for what could possibly come up during this season. Mm-hmm. It's not out there in the news per se, but there's a lot of work that's going on. We've had a readiness initiative that's gone on since the beginning of the year. It will culminate in a capstone exercise where we'll have both territorial and federal partners come together. Many of the agencies and departments here in the VI will participate in that. I'll let Daryl jump in on top of that if he has any other comments. But there's a lot of things that are going on that are sort of transparent to folks just walking around living their life.
Yeah. Yeah. You're doing all the work that allows us to do that.
Exactly.
Let's take this final break. Okay. And then when we come back, we'll talk about the capstone and we'll wrap up our preparedness conversation. We'll be back right after this short break.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
We are back. If you guys are just tuning in, you're at 93.1 FM WTJX, your NPR station here in the territory. I'm having a wonderful conversation with Director Daryl Jashin and Mr. Larry Katz from FEMA. And, you know, we like our FEMA people. We like FEMA. You know, FEMA, we love VITIMA. We really like FEMA because FEMA supports what VITIMA is doing. VITIMA is our immediate go-to person. Tag your IT Director Jashin. And then when Director Jashin needs an assist, FEMA is always there to assist. You're talking right before the break about the your May capstone project. What is that and what's going to be happening during that time period?
Let me turn it over. Yeah, Director, you go ahead and take this.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Again, this is a partnership. So this is something that we've been learning, you know, going back to 2017, some things that we have learned lessons on, and we've added to these initiatives and activities, and we have focus initiatives. So we are developing both local capability, and then if we need to have help or support surge at the federal level, it'll be FEMA as a coordinating agency like VITIMA, and then all the federal partners that may come along with that. It could be the military, it could be Department of Energy, it could be Department of Transportation, it could be Army Corps of Engineers, all those federal partners that have come through this. And we're really practicing getting together and very quickly making assessments of a situation based on obviously a hurricane scenario, you know, hitting somewhere either St. Croix, St. Thomas, or impacting, you know, both districts like we had, unfortunately, in Irma and Maria, and making sure we're prepared to assess and prepared to coordinate and bring individuals in. And really, it's a dress rehearsal, and it will kick off the 20th of May, and it will end on the 24th of May. And then we will be briefing, and these are, I say we, the lead emergency support function agencies, and those are all my lead agencies. We'll be briefing Governor Bryan and some of the FEMA senior leadership on the 31st of May to let him know our posture for being prepared. And the governor always asks about where are our gaps and where are our risks. So we'll present those also, and we'll continue to tighten those up and make sure we have things that are set up. You know, for example, we always talk about, you know, what are the shelters? So it's more than just going out and finding shelters and naming shelters. It's the process we go through by activating the shelters, getting the word out to the community, how many people we can stay in the shelters. We have medical special needs shelters. We have shelters that will allow individuals and their pets to come through. So all of that is set up, and obviously putting generators in locations that have to be run, because I won't open a shelter up without a generator, making sure VI police are available there, make sure Department of Human Services are there, American Red Cross. So a shelter operation is a great example of what we want to validate during this hurricane season. Some of us have done it for years. Some cases you have new individuals coming in, and in some cases FEMA has some new staff on board also. So a lot of it is getting to know each other during this week as well as understanding some of the challenges. Other things we'll focus in on is how do we open our airports back up once they're closed safely, both for military aircraft coming in and potentially for individuals trying to get either tourists or individuals who have homes damages or such that they don't want to stay on in the territory. How do I get the seaports back open again? Obviously, between, St. Thomas and St. John are key to the lifeline of getting that going open. How do I handle medical patients? If we've been compromised at a hospital, can I get patients transferred between Snyder Ridge Medical Center and Wanapulita Hospital? Do I have to take, patients across, unfortunately, to another location that are back in the States? How do I handle dialysis patients? I have 219 dialysis patients. Department of Health is very much wanting to know together how we work this to go. How do we get the routes cleared and debris removed? You've seen lots and lots of debris out, so we have to very quickly get that debris off the roads. How do we communicate to the public? How does Governor Bryan do a press conference? Who's at the press conferences for them? How do I work if we have unfortunate, fatalities? How do we work with that in, with Department of Justice? And how do I work really with our volunteers? We have a lot of volunteers in the territory. We get a lot of donations that will come through. We have to manage those donations. How do I work with access and functional needs individuals? Not everybody can get up and go right across the street to get what needed to be taken care of. So we'll help them and understand how we can help and assist with their Office of the American Disability Act Coordinator, ADA Coordinator, Mr. Henley. And of course, we have power, power and water. So how do I get the power back on? How do we work with generators set up and operate those safely? All those things are behind the scenes, but they do come in as we set up, like Larry was saying, underneath the water. We're very coordinatedly working this, both local and federal side, to make sure that we are prepared, for Governor Bryan and his priorities. And again, the priority for us is saving lives and preserving property. So while we may have an individual visiting the territory, wanting to get out of the territory, my resources are going to be spent assessing and make sure everybody's safely accounted for and taken care of. That's my number one concern. Then we'll start working about getting individuals out of the territory. So if we can focus on the business at hand of assessing and safely, putting blue roofs back on, getting points of distribution set up for food and water distribution. Like I said, being able to be by your own for 5 days. But after 5 days, I'll have points of distribution set up so I can give out those wonderful shelf-stable meals and boxed water, which now has a 10-year shelf life on it, which is really, really good to have that. So that's important to get information set up. Lots of things that we're doing. That's just a number of them that we'll talk about during that time frame. But it's probably about, I got about 150, 200 people coming together, covering down on St. Croix, St. Thomas, and St. John, and we'll have a little bit of activity on Water Island with some of our amateur radio operators for radio communications. But really, it's a good round out of what we're going to be doing during that time frame, and then finishing up that week, besides just, what's good, what was bad, what's the lessons learned, we'll continue to make improvements, and we'll continue the partnership, and every time we do have a threat, FEMA will come down here and we'll continue to exercise and get our preparedness so we're even better supported. And our National Guard, both air and army, that they're available to support us also. So that's a quick summary of what we'll be doing during Capstone Week.
Yes. But you mentioned something, and I don't want the perception to be left with the public that you, Director Joshin, can open our airports or our seaports. You said we have to be concerned about how we, how I'm able to, but for the record, can we just make it very clear to the public, the final say on the reopening of the airports and our seaports in the territory lies with which federal agency?
All right, I'll go with the seaports first. So really, our U.S. Coast Guard Sector San Juan, and we work very closely with them. And making sure it's safe to open those ports up. The challenge is if they see sunken boats or something there, they won't do anything about it. They let us take care of that. So we have to get that up either private sector, and we do have a wonderful Business Immersion Operations Center. We come together and set that up. But we actually have to take the effort of clearing the channel, scanning the channel, whether it's trying to get the WAPA, the fuel barge in there, the fuel ship in there. We're trying to get the channel back open between Red Hook. Those are all coordinated efforts, but ultimately you know, Captain Diaz, Sector San Juan, he makes the call, but we explain to him the condition to work with his staff to make sure it's set up. So that's really, really what we work with. And we do have exceptions we can work with. If we have emergency conditions, work with Coast Guard to have a single boat or our medical boat go back and forth between St. John and St. Thomas. So they're very willing to work with us. But from a freight perspective and from a cargo perspective, from a ferry perspective, there's a deliberate process we use. The airports, I'll put it in two categories. The military coming in, Department of Defense, there's certain measures they have to go through and be vetted. That's not my call. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, colonels that do that. They walk their runway, make the decision. They give the green light to go, and that should be done first. And then there's a whole concerns between TSA, physical security, Port Authority, what has to be done to make those conditions to open it up. And the FAA obviously is, you know, making it safe to dip. But one of the challenges we have, if you can't get the TSA screeners up, you really can't screen to make sure safely people are on going over the aircraft. That was a delay we had last in 17. So making sure we have equipment, make sure we have, you know, repairs brought in, make sure staffing that's set up, all has to come to bear. But I put that in the priority of scheme. Each day we talk about our priorities, where they are, who's in charge of them, what's the progress, what's the hurdles, what can the governor do, what can the president do, what can Pima Region do to make it quicker but still safe. But mm-hmm. You're right. It's not Director Josh and saying it is. I'm going to prioritize that based on governor, and the governor's going to set those priorities, and we're going to execute based upon his leadership.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, so many people, you know, the misinformation is like, oh, they don't want us to fly out. No, we have to wait for the FAA, TSA, Customs, all of those people have to come to some sort of agreement, because we just can't have people flying out of the territory. You know, you have to make sure that they aren't traveling with contraband into the continental United States. And so there's steps that have to be taken, and our ports, the Coast Guard has to give the all clear, or the coast is clear.
The other piece I would add is, you know, the island of St. John, we had a lot of private helicopters going over there, people up in 17, and really impeding our operations. So what I've done, you know, is working with the FAA, working with Port Authority, we will put out a notice to aviators that say, you know, you cannot come into St. John unless you are cleared by the tower to come in there, because we are running military operations. We're looking at trying to save lives. Mm-hmm. And there's only one landing zone over there right now that they can use, over by Myra Keating Smith. And I don't want that, you know, to not be used properly in accordance with the priorities of saving lives and, you know, medical evacuations. But helicopters coming in that are taking people out that were private, it's not going to happen. You know, I don't want that happening again.
Yeah.
We're doing everything we can, working with the FAA to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And, you know, for the mega wealthy, you know, if a hurricane is coming, you know, and you know that you can't survive in the conditions that exist after a hurricane, prior to the hurricane coming is when you should use your disposable income to get off the island and not impede the progress of the people who have no choice but to stay here and live in the aftermath of the storms by using your wealth. I wanted to say that as nicely as I could. All right. So thank you, Director Joshin, for clearing all of that stuff up. Now, are you also in conversations beforehand, or do you know if the hospitals are in conversations beforehand with, you know, places off island, so that if we have to do medical evacuations, they don't have to wait to have those kinds of discussions? Are there already preliminary memorandum of understandings that exist between hospitals and stateside locations?
Yeah. I would say, I know historically we have done that, okay. And I believe they're year-to-year, and I think that's part of what we're looking at setting up this year also, is to make sure we have those agreements that are established. I know, talking to, you know, Department of Health and Human Services, you know, they're very concerned about making the assessments, and if we do move patients out of the territory, you know, can we track them, first of all? So there's mechanisms we put in place now, both for Department of Human Services, who will be the case managers if individuals are taken out of the territory, and by our policy now, a caregiver has to go with them, a non-medical you know, emergency person goes with that person also as they get evacuated out. So that's important, and it goes on. So tracking patients are just as important as getting those memorandums of agreement setting up. You don't necessarily know, you know, with storms coming through, we try to avoid Puerto Rico, we try to avoid Florida because that's where they could go next, like we happened in 17. So I cannot tell you right now which locations there are, but definitely Department of Health, Department of Human Services have that on the forefront for their concerns of going into hurricane season.
All right. I just, you know, I thought that was important because, and of course, you know, I will always advocate for individuals with disabilities to make sure that all shelters are ADA accessible, and in addition to having a special needs shelter, which typically deals with individuals with disabilities and individuals with medical concerns, that individuals who live independently and are disabled, that they have access at all of the shelters. So
I
just...
Yes, and the medical special needs shelters, I want to emphasize this because it is, you know, pre-screened, predetermined individuals. So if you are in a condition that you are a location that you're going to need to go, you need to sign up for that through Department of Health and Human Services and make sure that you're identified on that list. I think it's probably between, you know, 20 individuals on St. Croix, maybe 20 on St. Thomas, that we definitely have locations set up to take care of them and pre-move them. And then to be able to get them back out after the storm goes through, or to keep them there if their homes have been destroyed. But that's definitely, we take that very seriously. We do a lot of coordination for that, just like the shelters in general. For Congress shelters and post shelters, the medical special needs shelters are very important.
Yes, and I will urge, you know, I found this out after the storms of 2017 when I held the position that Julian Henley now holds, is that we have a vast amount of people with disabilities who live at home whose parents and their families have never registered them to attend school. They're not on our books anywhere. I would urge those parents, allow yourself to be seen. God doesn't make any mistakes. If you know your child or your adult child is going to need that shelter, do not be ashamed to register and keep your family safe.
Yeah, and along that line, we also have the senior registry, which is a volunteer item to do for individuals who are over age 60 and live alone, or individuals that live alone with any medical disability, to get them signed up. And you can sign up through the Department of Human Services.
And we need to, Director Josh, and I have to cut you off because time is up. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.